Falun Gong is freely practiced in more than 50 countries, but relentlessly persecuted in China. The peaceful courage of practitioners there has shocked their oppressors and moved the people of the world. While China continues to block information about the persecution, FGM TV brings you the stories you may not hear anywhere else.
Hello, and welcome to the FGM TV Weekly News Review on December 17, 2002. I'm David Tompkins. In this week's update from China, the number of Falun Gong practitioners verified to have died while in detention is 529, with details of 8 more confirmed deaths received in the past week. Reliable sources inside China, however, put the actual death count in the thousands. In the last 7 days, reports of persecution have come in from 12 provinces and from the city of Beijing. 533 people declared as void all statements they had made under torture and at times when their minds were not clear. They said they intend to continue practicing Falun Gong. Our top story this week. As the date approaches for the end of public consultation on Hong Kong's Article 23, hundreds of thousands of people around the world come out to march and protest. And some of our other stories. Persecution details from a survivor of the infamous Wanjia labor camp. Noted human rights lawyer in France initiates legal action against China's vice premier for torture of Falun Gong practitioners. Dafa practitioners in Sichuan province were stuffed into sacks and kidnapped and robbed. Archaeological relics from Poland verify the existence of prehistoric civilization. Christine Loftus interviews FGM TV's first news anchor, Susan Mitchell, about her recovery from breast cancer after starting to practice Falun Dafa. Worldwide protests against the upcoming Hong Kong national security legislation over the weekend of December 14th and 15th, tens of thousands of people around the world came out to march and condemn Hong Kong's Article 23, the upcoming controversial legislation on national security. As many as 50,000 turned out in Hong Kong, forming a 6-kilometer demonstration that snaked through the city. Representatives from dozens of local groups, including the Roman Catholic Church, the Falun Gong spiritual movement, trade unions, and journalists. China has more journalists locked up than any other country. They all came out together to form one of the biggest demonstrations since the territory came under Chinese sovereignty. Some carried black balloons to symbolize mourning, some sang religious hymns, and others chanted slogans against this evil law. More than 9,500 formal submissions have been received to date, including a strongly critical one from the Hong Kong Bar Association. But a government spokesman said that the government has both a moral and constitutional obligations to implement Article 23. Hong Kong, being an integral part of the People's Republic of China, must enact laws on its own to protect national security. Contrary to Hong Kong's basic law, which provides for one country, two systems, for 50 years following Hong Kong's 1997 return to China, Article 23 in its present form would allow the Chinese government to ban any Hong Kong-based organization deemed to be affiliated to a mainland organization classified as a threat to national security. Free trade unions and Falun Gong are both banned in mainland China. It isn't hard to imagine what could happen in Hong Kong. Support for the marchers in Toronto. Falun Gong practitioners in Toronto said, "When we were walking along in a parade, a coffee shop owner generously invited all participants to have some coffee for free in his shop. I could tell that he was very touched because he is very concerned with Article 23 and because we were stepping out for him." Dafa practitioners from Sichuan province were stuffed into sacks and kidnapped and robbed. A report has been received that more than 40 Falun Dafa practitioners from Chengdu City were violently kidnapped by the police during the 16th Party Congress. Apparently, Chengdu Regional Police and Chengdu City organized dozens of police to surround the buildings where practitioners lived. Then, more police would rush into the buildings, grab the practitioners, and stuff them into large gunny sacks. The tied-up practitioners were then beaten and kicked before being carried downstairs and thrown into waiting police cars. Some of those abducted were store owners who were not only forced to suffer in the same humiliating way, but also had all of their merchandise confiscated by the police. The whereabouts of more than 40 practitioners is unknown, but it is believed that large numbers have been detained in Nibatu Brainwashing Center. Persecution details from a survivor of the infamous Wangia labor camp. In several previous programs, we've mentioned the Wangia labor camp, but we could not give details of the terrible things that go on behind its walls. Recently, through fast action, and while her office was closed for the weekend, Canadian Immigration Minister Eleanor Caplan issued a special visa to rescue Ms. Yuqi Wang to Canada from the United Arab Emirates. Local police there had been bombarded with propaganda from the Chinese embassy and had arrested Ms. Wang. During a recent conference in Toronto, she told a hushed audience the following details. At the Wangia forced labor camp, I went on a hunger strike for more than 100 days. They could no longer force feed me through my nose. My nose became blocked and I almost suffocated many times. With continued torture, her health deteriorated until April, when she said that I could not stand and both of my eyes were running blood and pus and I could not open them. I was tortured both physically and mentally, and I almost went blind. Due to my health, I was released on May 8th and went home to recover. Then I transferred to Saudi Arabia. All of my experiences verify the facts of the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China. And this is only one part of what tens of thousands of practitioners in China are going through right now. I call upon the support of the international community and all kind-hearted people to continue with us in our efforts to end this cruel persecution. Through the miracle of practicing Falun Gong exercises, after she left the Wangia labor camp, Ms. Wang's eyesight has returned to normal. Lawyers for Falun Gong practitioners initiate legal action from France against China's vice premier. Agence France-Presse, reporting from Paris, said that on October 4, 2002, four followers of the Falun Gong spiritual group launched legal action in southern France, in the city of Nice, against China's vice premier, Li Lingqing. The vice premier is also head of China's 610 office. That's the main above-the-law agency established by the Jiang regime to carry out its state-run campaign of terrorism against Falun Gong. Noted human rights lawyers for the plaintiffs, William Burden and George Henry Baultier, said the complaint was based on the UN Convention Against Torture, which France signed in 1984. This convention allows France to arrest and prosecute any person guilty of torture. Baultier told Agence France-Presse he had gathered overwhelming testimony about the activities of the 610 office. And it is the first time in Europe that a Chinese leader has faced such a complaint. The four plaintiffs are Ms. Yuqi Wang, currently residing in Canada, and whose story from the Wangia labor camp was related earlier in this program. French citizen Ms. Helene Petit, who was arrested, detained, and beaten when she took part in a peaceful appeal in Tiananmen Square in November of 2001. Mr. Ming Zhao, a Chinese postgraduate student at Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, who was tortured both physically and mentally for 2 years in several forced labor camps, and French resident Ms. Zhu Mei Chen, while appealing in China against the persecution of Falun Gong in July 2000, she was arrested, imprisoned, and wildly beaten. Her arm was broken, and to this day she remains handicapped. The State of Illinois House of Representatives hosts a Falun Dafa photo exhibit. From the 3rd to the 5th of December, a 3-day photographic exhibition entitled Path to Return, Truthfulness, Compassion, Forbearance was held in the lobby of the Illinois State House. During the opening ceremony, practitioners thanked state senators and assemblymen for passing a resolution condemning the Chinese government's persecution against Falun Dafa. The 3 days of the exhibit coincided with the regular meeting of the State Senate and House of Representatives, so the lobby was always crowded, since it is also a popular tourist destination. A local weekly newspaper published an article on the exhibition entitled Persecution of the Innocent. This prompted some local residents to come and find out more about what exactly is happening in China. Broken fingers discovered in a mountain cave in Poland verify the existence of a prehistoric civilization. In a mountain cave near Podhale, archaeologists from the Polish Academy of Sciences have discovered some men's thumbs and little fingers. Cutting off fingers was a solemn ritual for ancient men. It was usually used for secret associations, circumcision, and funerals. The site of these relics was at the 8th archaeological level, where people lived approximately 29,000 years ago. Rock fences, sharp animal teeth used for protection, and animal horns and shells were found in the same locale, indicating that the place had been used to offer sacrifices to gods or ancestors. According to Darwin's theory of evolution, human beings have existed for only about 10,000 years. Archaeological discoveries like this shed new light on the existence of prehistoric civilizations. These artifacts verify that, as it is taught in Falandafa, human beings have existed on Earth much longer than current theories allow. An interview with FGM-TV's first English news anchor, Susan Mitchell. This week, we're happy to bring you an interview that Christine Loftus conducted with FGM-TV's first news anchor, our own Susan Mitchell, who talks about her recovery from breast cancer after starting to practice Falun Gong.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Christine.
Thank you for joining us today. I've known you for 3 years, Susan, and I understand you used to be very ill. I never would have guessed this. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've been through these past few years?
Well, 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with a malignant carcinoma in my right breast, and the oncologist wanted to do surgery and radiation and tamoxifen for the rest of my life, and also take a couple of the lymph glands. But I decided I would do alternative therapies, which I did for a year, probably 50 different types, which cost me about $14,000. And after that year, a friend of mine introduced me to Falun Gong. And within one day of starting to read the book, my body returned to normal. I have a lump still, but every function is just exactly the way it should be. My adrenal glands were so fatigued, I didn't sweat for 5 years, and I never had to buy deodorant. The alternative therapies in 15 months cost me about $14,000. And 4 years ago, after I started the practice of Falun Dafa, or since then, I haven't had to buy even a vitamin pill. So it saved me an incredible amount of money. You know, one thing that cancer patients experience is constant infections because your immune system is totally depleted. And during that time, I was doing all these therapies. If I ate even one piece of fruit, which has a fair amount of sugar, I'd get an infection immediately. But I've never had an infection since I started doing this practice. And almost immediately, I cut out my macrobiotic diet, which was rather expensive and time-consuming, and just went back to eating a totally normal diet, you know, with chocolate cake and chocolate bars and all the rest of it, and I've never had another infection. It's from a health point of view and also from a spiritual point of view, it's been totally wonderful for me.
Seems like it's had a lot of dramatic changes on your life. Is this common in Falun Dafa?
Yes, I think it is. You know, I've met other people who've had life-threatening illnesses, and their lives, like mine, have been totally transformed. I mean, my stress level was so high because of the illness that I couldn't do an office job, a regular full-time job. But within 6 months, I was back working full-time. So I've seen other people who've had similar kinds of experiences where literally your life becomes normal.
Thank you for sharing your story with us, Susan.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks, Christine. And thanks, Susan. It's great. great to hear such positive news about such a life-threatening illness.
Thanks for watching FGM TV, dedicated to breaking through China's information blockade, exposing the state terrorism, and bringing you the truth of Falun Gong.